for the next to last hearing, a meeting of the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. Today is May 13th, 2003. We have one bill to work today, and we intend to hear a lot of testimony from the folks who have traveled some distance to come and share their thoughts with us, even though it is not listed as a public hearing per se. The chair has the option in the work session to call forward individuals, and I'll be availing myself of that opportunity to call forward people here shortly. So we have the three amigos in front of us here. The chair's going to open up work session on Senate Bill 673A. And gentlemen, would you come forward, please? Now, you should know that I usually start the committee hearings by my little statement about that if you are an elected official or a lobbyist, that you're bound under the law to give truthful and accurate testimony. So I am sure that I won't have to remind you of that. So, gentlemen, welcome. And Senator Messerly, this is your bill. Would you lead off and tell us what we're trying to do here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be very brief because you've got a lot of people here that I think you'll bring forward with a lot of technical information. There are three points I want to make that this bill does, or the importance of this bill. It's extremely important for the economy of the coastal counties and communities. Our economy is in dire straits, and this will allow the fishing industries to, on a much more timely basis, start the seasons and get the fishermen out on the water and markets coming back. In the practices, the way it's working now, many times there's close to a month of delays before the fishermen can get out on the waters. And this bill is designed to, on a voluntary basis, and I want to really stress that this is a voluntary basis, allows them to get together and work out a starting price, and only a starting price. Another major factor is the safety. Boats are forced, because of the present practices, to go out under very, very unsafe conditions. And this past year, I don't know the exact number, but I know there have been deaths that were simply because it was bad weather and the fishermen were basically, if they wanted to keep their pay their bills, had to go out and start their fisheries. What this bill really does is protects both the processors and the fishermen from antitrust lawsuits. And it does that, and that is the reason that we have the bill requires that the Department of Agriculture really conduct the meetings and write a summary of what was decided by those participating in this voluntary process. So that's all I want to tell you now. Again, I want to stress that it is a voluntary process, and the department will not move forward in this process unless there's a strong majority of the industry, both processors and fishermen in attendance, or that want to go through the process, use the process. So, thank you.
Any questions of Senator Messerly? I know you have to leave, Senator.
Did I identify myself for the record?
I'm not sure you did.
I'm State Senator Ken Messerly from Mid-Oregon Coast.
I'm glad
thank you,
to
Senator.
That.
If you need to leave, Representative Verger is sitting behind you, and we can replace you, even though you're irreplaceable.
Well, I will stay with my good friend, Representative Krieger, because I cannot conduct my meeting until he's there, so I want to make
sure. I see. Okay. All right. Representative, for the record.
Chair Krupp, committee members, for the record, I'm Wayne Currier, state rep from District 1, South Coast, Southern Oregon. There are several commercial fishermen here today, and I will leave to them to explain their marketing problems and sometimes unscrupulous practices that they have to deal with. In my prior life, and I refer to it as my prior life, it's been some time now. As you all know, I worked for the Oregon State Police Game Enforcement Division for 28 years. And most of that time was on the Oregon coast at Gold Beach, Brookings. And I played hide-and-seek with some of these guys back here. It was a great career with great commercial fishing families and a group of people that I began to, over time, think a lot of as people. During that time, I checked thousands of commercial fish boats. I've crawled in and out of fish holes. I've been covered with fish, slime, and blood. I did manage to get by 28 years checking thousands of tons of crab without ever getting nailed. I always thought I would, but I never did. This industry that they work in is a very difficult industry. It's hard work. It's dangerous. It's long hours. And it takes a certain person, type of person, to be successful. Not everyone can do it. Many tribe, but not many are successful at it. The marketing of the products that they harvest has been also equally difficult over the years. And let me make it one thing clear. We need both the people who buy the products, the buyers, and the commercial fishermen to both be successful if this industry is to continue. Senate Bill 673 is a reasonable way to try to negotiate a price, both in resources. State-supervised price negotiations are fair and a reasonable method. With recent groundfish quotas, protected species, and fewer buyers, it's necessary that communications take place between all parties. Specifically to crab, and although this issue goes far beyond crabs, if you have, and we have every year, beginning of the season, somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,500 crab boats tied up from south of Frisco up to the Canadian border. Many of these people at some point will have to go fishing regardless of the price, and that's why it's suppressed at the beginning of the season. They have to make their boat payment, their mortgage payment, their car payment, and provide food for their families. They have no choice. And in some instances, it's obvious that some industry people have weighed heavily on that and taken advantage of it. I want to speak just a minute about a memo that was put out the other day by Roger Martin and Associates. And at the top of that, it says pricing should be left to supply and demand, not legislation. As long as somebody is buying between 60% of the fish on the Oregon coast and some species at certain times up to 80% of the product, you no longer have an open, negotiable type thing. You've got a monopoly, and that's what they're dealing with. Dealers do not set seafood prices. Consumers do. Well, other day I went in here and I bought some salmon steak out here at Ross. I can guarantee you that I didn't negotiate the price. They told me what I was going to pay for a pound. It's the retailers and the wholesalers that set the price, not the fishermen. Third bullet they had, their under Senate Bill 673, Department of Agriculture would need to reconvene daily to ratify prices in an ever-changing market. Only if they don't agree to a price, or if the price changed, and if they went beyond the time period of the negotiation. So that doesn't hold water at all. In fact, most everything on this piece of paper, I'd hate to have an attorney go through it. You'd make them look pretty foolish. And they, of course, try to say that the seafood and ryegrass markets are not comparable because this bill does take after a bill, which I'll get to, that I believe the good chair sponsored last session when I was on your committee. We voted for it. And then it says the multi-state market makes price fixing a mistake. It isn't price fixing. That's illegal. It's a negotiated thing. If you want to talk about price fixing, I was on those docks for 40 years. That's how long I've been around that industry. How is it I can go down to the docks at Brookings when crab's $1.25 every buyer? Within 15 minutes, the price goes to $1.50, and everybody changes to $1.50. The fact of the matter is the buyers have been conspiring for years and are in violation of antitrust laws. And I've had that conversation recently with Josh Marquis, the DA from Clatsop County, and also from the AG's office, because they were in my office about 2.5 months ago regarding this type of issues and possible legislation that I couldn't get done this session, but I will next session. Participation by the dealers is voluntary, yet adherence to price determinations at these meetings is mandatory, and only if you agree and for a specific period of time. What that means is, and the senator alluded to it, you have to have some certainty for both the buyer and the fishermen that they have some certainty when they do their marketing. That's only common sense and reasonable. The only reference that I'm going to make to conduct of some buyers is that about 2.5-3 years ago, the Oregon State Police did a statewide investigation on the entire Oregon coast regarding this particular client's this particular client of Roger Martin. when it all got said and done, there's about $800,000 in judgments were made against the company because of their fishing practices and the fact that their bookkeeping practices and poundage fees that they had failed to pay the state. When all their records were brought in, the computers and stuff from the fishermen, that's what they ended up having to pay, and that was negotiated with Josh Marquis and the AG's office of the state of Oregon. Now, mind you, that if they're going to pull that kind of stuff on the state of Oregon, what do you think they're going to try to do with the individual fishermen? Not too good. I want to thank Chair Kropp for last year's 3811. I feel that that bill was a good bill. It gave some certainty both the ryegrass growers and the industry people that supply that product. And if it's good enough for the farmers, ryegrass growers, it's good enough for commercial fishermen. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Senator Mezulik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize to you and the committee. I negated to make one comment that I intended to. I strongly urge the committee to pass this bill out without amendments. I don't think it's necessary. This bill has worked hard. It's very well put together by a lot of people working together, and I strongly urge you to pass it out as is. Thank you.
Thank you. If you gentlemen need to go. Okay, wait, hang on. Representative Hunt.
I'm sorry, I couldn't stick all my tough questions on Representative Brown, but I think you guys are probably closer to this issue. A couple things. You referenced something like 60 to 80% purchased from one source or something like that. What could you flesh out what that one
Chair
source
Crop,
is?
Representative Hunt, particular company that is objecting to this. Even the lobby person the other day said, we buy 60% of the fish on the Oregon coast. That's true. But there are certain species of fish, or in other words, shrimp, for instance, when there's only a couple of processors on the coast, they might buy 80% of it during a period of time. That's the only market available. So they do really have a monopoly compared to anything that you might see in most types of industries.
So if I could follow up, that's one company or a series of companies that are part of the association?
It would be, in that particular company's case, they have four or five companies that all have the word Pacific, I believe, in the name.
Okay. And if I could follow up with one other, is this the kind of thing, is there another state that has a similar kind of process that we could look to and see how it's worked, what the success is and how it has been?
Chair Kropp, Representative Hunt, I don't know for certain whether they do. I knew in California for some time they had market orders they put out, and you signed on to a market order for a given length of time at a certain price, and they could pull the market order with a certain amount of notice ahead of time. I don't know what they're doing down there now.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you both.
Thank you.
Representative Berger, would you come forward and join Representative Brown, please? Representative Brown, welcome.
Thank
for the record,
you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm State Representative Alan Brown from House District 10. I would make a comment to start with here regarding Representative Hunt's question as to how if this process had worked anywhere else. And I would say that the chairman could relate whether it worked with the grass seed industry, and if it did there, I think it would have very close parallels. The fishermen are not a great deal different than the farmers. They're out gathering a product and delivering it to a place to sell their product, and I would suspect it's very similar to what's taking place within the grass seed industry. I'm here today just to mostly say ditto to what the good Senator Mezulik and Representative Krieger said regarding this bill. Senate Bill 673 would remove the obstacles to having an open dialogue among fishermen and processors. It's a voluntary process. It's necessary to establish a stable fishing industry in our community. Crab fishing, in particular, any of the commercial fisheries, are very dangerous business to be in, and crab fishing, particularly because of time of year that they are going to sea. Generally, crab season opens December 1, and if there's no agreement on price, they're tied up at the dock and puts just greater pressure on these folks because they've only had a certain given time to go out and work their pots and bring that product to shore. And the longer that's delayed, the greater pressure that's put on them. I had a good friend, Bob Etter, that son was on. He has two crab boats. One that was going out on the opening day after the season was delayed some considerable time because of price difference, and they were just off the Aquinnah Head when and running with another boat when the boat suddenly disappeared, rolled over. They were loaded with crab pots. All four of the people on that boat drowned. Bob Etter's son was just home from college for the for during the Christmas vacation to earn some dollars to go back to college, and it very devastating to that family and to that community. And I would urge the passage of Senate Bill 673. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Berger, welcome, for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Joanne Berger, and I'm an Oregon State Representative from District 9. My district runs from Coos Bay to north to Florence on the coast, and I, too, am here in support of the bill. I think you can only live on the coast and be involved with the fishing industry to know the trials and tribulations that they've been through. And we've all tried to be supportive through that time, and we will continue to be supportive of that industry, which needs to be brought back to a larger thing. To this particular bill, I want to take this opportunity to tell you a little bit about Mr. Nick Furman. I hope that he'll be testifying after I testify. I just want to give him my strongest recommendation. He works with the Dungeness crab industry and is so highly respected in my community and up and down the Oregon coast and of course, really, in other countries other than even our own country where he has worked. And so it is really my pleasure to be here today to be supportive of this bill and certainly of the fishing industry that is so important to the Oregon coast. So thank you.
Before I take Representative Nelson's question, quick question for you. Do either one of you think this bill is fine as it is, or is there room for amendment?
I would prefer, Chairman Krepp, I'd prefer that the bill be passed as it is.
I believe once you start amending it, there's a possibility that you would harm the intent of the bill.
Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you.
Good to have you back, by the way.
Thank you very much. Representative Berger and Representative Brown, how is this assessment going to work for those who participate in this process?
The assessment?
To pay for the services. That's what I read here. It said the department, I'm sure meaning Department of Ag, would collect fees from the parties to pay for the costs of supervising the negotiations. And I'm just curious how that will work.
And you know, I have to tell you that I don't know how that process is going to work. Perhaps someone behind
me. Good answer, Representative Berger. Yes. I see the folks at ODA shaking
someone
their head. They can probably answer that
good.
For us.
I'm glad. Okay.
And we'll give them an opportunity to do that.
All right. And very good.
Sure. One follow-up question. And I think maybe Representative Hunt really asked this question, and I probably wasn't paying close enough attention. But does California, California and Washington require this same type of a negotiating posture?
Representative Nelson, Chair Krepp, Representative Nelson, I couldn't answer that. I couldn't tell you that they do or they don't.
Thank you both very much. Chair, I'd like to call Nick Furman forward, if you would, Nick. Senator Measley made that clear. Welcome, Nick. For the record, state your name, please.
Thank you very much. For the record, my name is Nick Furman. I am the executive director of the Oregon Dungeness Crab Commission and the administrator of the state's newest commodity commission, the Oregon Albacore Commission. On behalf of the 450 limited entry Dungeness crab permit holders in the state of Oregon, about a dozen of which are sitting behind me, and I appreciate their efforts to take time off the ocean on such a beautiful day to come to the capital to speak on this bill. I do want to say thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for giving us this opportunity. I know this is one of those on-again, off-again ones that we weren't quite sure what was going to happen. And so just the fact that we're here now and having the chance to explain the intent of SB 673 is quite significant for us. I'm going to start out by saying that that this whole process began by a very innocent email back in January 24th of this year, which said, Nick, I've noticed the significant difficulties in price negotiations again this year relative to crab. Of course, if you were awake and reading the papers at that time, that's all the headlines said on the coast, was the fact that we had a hard time establishing a price and getting the fishery started. It went on to say that I would encourage that you have discussions with fishermen and dealers about their potential interest in expanding HB 3811 to enable all dealers and fishermen representatives to sit down at the table at the same time under the auspices of the Oregon Department of Agriculture. And that was, in fact, what got this whole process started and was the motivation for this bill within our industry. It was very innocent at that point. It was a way to try to find a solution to a problem that has plagued the crab industry for decades. Up until now and currently, we are using a process to get the fishery started that is archaic, that has been used by the industry for the last 50 years because of lack of any other method. And quite frankly, it's broken. It just doesn't work anymore. And the industry has said resoundingly that we need to find a new way. That's one of the missions of the Dungeness Crab industry or commission. When the industry says jump, we say basically how high. And that's why we're here today. The Dungeness crab fishery is the most valuable fishery in the state of Oregon. And along the coast, it's the most competitive fishery on the ocean. It's also the most dangerous fishery. Actuarial tables indicate that commercial fishing is the most dangerous. It is more dangerous than deep earth mining, if you can imagine that. And Dungeness crab fishing and crab fishing in general ranks on the top of that list. It also happens to be the most profitable fishery to the industry, both to fishermen and to processors in the state of Oregon. The bill that that we are proposing, that you're considering today, is quite simple in its intent. It creates a forum for face-to-face price negotiations. It allows buyers and fishermen to meet to discuss price with protection from state and federal antitrust. The process, as you've heard from people who testified before me, is completely voluntary. We think that's a key to the key to the bill and a key to making it acceptable and palatable to everybody in the industry. If you don't want to be there, if you don't want to participate, you don't have to. There is no state agency compelling participation. ODA will only enter the process if a majority of the catching and buying capacity on the coast is represented. In other words, this is not a situation where a small group of fishermen or a small group of buyers representing a minority can come in, sit down, negotiate a price under the umbrella of and protection of ODA, and then force or compel that price on the rest of the industry on the coast. That cannot happen. The ODA involvement provides the necessary state supervision, which is required for the antitrust aspect of it. Without ODA involvement, we do not have that state supervision component, and the parties are subject to both state and federal antitrust prosecution. The bill does not guarantee that a price will be achieved by the parties. There is no guarantee here. It's fully understood by all people involved in the intent of the people promoting this legislation that if the parties get together and they cannot come to an agreement, everybody walks away, they're free to go back to the coast and find another way to establish the price. And ODA will only ratify a price that's a result of mutual agreement of the parties. In other words, everybody that's at the table who's voluntarily participating in this process has to agree and has to come up with a price that they can say then to ODA, this is what we will accept for a starting price as an industry, and ODA will ratify that accordingly. If they can't, again, everybody goes home. There was some question about how the funds or how it's going to be paid for, and I think I'll let the people from ODA answer that question. They can do a lot better job of that than I can. There was a question from Representative Nelson about California and Washington. As it stands right now, the fleets from Central California to the end of the Washington coast in Westport currently get together under the umbrella of marketing associations and negotiate a price. So this price that we're talking about is already done on a coast, is being established on a coast-wide basis. It's a very cumbersome process. It involves anywhere between 3 to 6 weeks of conference calls, which are quite expensive, and it's very, very disorganized and very, very frustrating. It's our intent that this legislation would provide something that is far less chaotic, far more productive, far less in terms of time, and that it would be far more effective. The idea behind the legislation, and just to so that everybody understands where we're coming from, is simply to establish a starting or an opening price. We did not have the luxury of starting out with a blank piece of paper because of the time constraints of this legislative session, and so this the Bill 673 is basically a mirror image of 3811. It was our sense that that had already undergone thorough and significant legal review and had successfully passed through the legislature, and so we felt that if that was good law 2 years ago, that it would apply for our industry. And quite frankly, what we simply did was have legislative counsel basically wherever it said dealer, they put in processor, wherever it said grower, they put in seafood harvester. It was just that simple. And in doing so, the bill was obviously vague. It was the intention of proponents of the legislation that once the bill passed and the industry started to you get together to discuss and apply the process involved, that then through administrative rule we could come up with details and aspects of the bill of the process that would make it apply and a fit specifically to the seafood industries. I know there's some concern about whether this should be whether the scope of the bill should remain as applying to all seafood commodities in the state or just the crab fishery. The Crab Commission was the one that initially proposed the bill. When we were asked to consider expanding it to apply to all seafood harvested in the state, we saw no problem with that for two simple reasons. Most of the fishermen on the coast are multi-species fishermen, multi-fishery fishermen. They do not just fish crab or they do not just fish salmon. They are involved in all the fisheries. And quite frankly, we're not the only fishery that needs help sometimes in getting the season jump started. And we felt that if this model and this process outlined in this legislation could work for crab, that it would be a lot more efficient if other fishermen and processors on the coast could just apply the same legislation as opposed to having to come back to the Capitol, take your time, take their time, and develop other sets of bills for the other fisheries. And that's why we think it should remain all Oregon seafood. There's no intent here to try to raise or lower prices. There's no intent to give fishermen or processors a leg up in any aspect of the price negotiation process for this bill. It's simply an attempt to try to get the fishery started on time so that we can save money, save lives, and go about the business of harvesting and processing Oregon seafood resource. That's about all I have to say. I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Thank you, Nick. Members, do we have questions? Representative Nelson and then Representative Beyer. And Representative Hunt, okay.
Mr. Furman, we'll see you later. Is that right?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm just curious, having been vice chair of the Ag Committee with Representative Krupp, who was our chair in the last session, I'm very familiar with 3811, but I guess what I'm wondering is how, unless we have some written signature in blood, how are we going to establish that the grouper, is going to live with this starting price? I mean, what is the commitment of just, yes, this is a good price, and we'll start at $5 a pound, and how would that process work? You like it? All right.
Those guys would really be happy.
Well, forget that, and I'll just mark it for you. Okay.
We don't. We don't think that the bill is necessarily going to change the process as it occurs right now. Right now, the fishermen get together and they acquire all the available marketing data they can, and then they determine what they think is a fair asking price to get the fishery started for their particular fishery. The processors typically then offer a counteroffer, provide a counteroffer at some time during the process, and it becomes a sort of a back and forth game until finally they can whittle down this this figure till it's acceptable for both parties, and then at some point they meet at presumably the middle somewhere, and that price is acceptable. Typically the fishermen start high, the processors start low, and they work towards that center price. We think that that what SB 673 does is basically put a framework to it. So instead of having it done through conference calls in coffee shops and in back gear lockers and so forth up and down the coast, and information passed back and forth, second and third hand and second and third party between fishermen and marketing associations and various buyers up the coast, up and down the coast, that a formal process where the groups agree to sit down on a particular day at a particular time, a particular location, will be a lot more beneficial for the industry and will help us achieve that final starting number a lot easier and with a lot less effort.
A follow-up.
Okay, sure.
Mr. Berman, thank you for that information. Since all the other agricultural commodities are facing a real big dilemma right now because of the Supreme Court ruling that they're not fully representative of the participating farmers, for example, because they're not giving their input into how the product should be marketed. I'm concerned, would it be a majority of the 450 crab fishermen that would vote in the majority rule that this is a good price? Is this is this how we would go about establishing a price, that we would have to have a majority of 450, or else we've got to put it on the ballot, right? Just kidding.
Right now, what occurs is that all the major ports from Fort Bragg, California to Westport, Washington have got marketing associations. This came about as a result of, and another reason why we feel this legislation is important, antitrust investigation that occurred back in 1996, I think, where the AG's office determined that that fishermen were talking price without the protection of a marketing association. So all the ports form marketing associations. These marketing associations, all the fishermen in the various ports are members of the marketing associations. They get together, they discuss what the price, what they feel the fair price will be. They concur with one another up and down the coast, and they come up with a coast-wide asking price. And so, yes, it is representative of basically all the fishermen. The 450 crab fishermen I referred to are simply ones that hold Oregon limited entry permits. But as it stands right now, the price is negotiated on behalf of all the fishermen in the entire range from from Fort Bragg, California to Washington. And there's been some question about how an Oregon bill or law would impact fishermen from other states. There are, because of limited entry that was passed in all three states a number of years ago, there are fishermen in each state that have multiple state permits. There are fishermen in Washington that have Oregon permits. There are fishermen in Oregon that have California permits. And what we envision is that this model of negotiation would be such that marketing association representatives who had Oregon permits would be elected as delegates to the bargaining committee on behalf of the harvesters from Washington or from California and from Washington as well. So they would be represented and they would be able to negotiate because they're Oregon permitted vessels.
Okay. Representative Byer.
Actually, he just answered my question. That was the question I was
asking. I was reading your mind.
So. Thank you.
Okay, that's it. Well,
of the 450 limited entry crab licenses in Oregon, do you have a sense of all of how many of those are actually how many of those are actually Oregonians? Is it 3/4, half, 90%? I just have no idea.
There are, I think. I want to say somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 permits. 40 plus permits that are held by fishermen that live outside the state. in Oregon, and then the balance of them are Oregon residents.
Yes, please.
Absolutely. One of the key phrases that you had mentioned and your predecessors on the panel mentioned was voluntary participation in the program. Can you help point me to somewhere in the bill where it talks about that voluntary? I mean, I see where it references a voluntary nature, but then I look in under Section 3. Let's see, that would be Section 3. Subsection 2B, where it talks about an Oregon Seafood Harvester Cooperative or Oregon Seafood Harvester Association may negotiate with one or more dealers. And then it makes it sound like compliance with whatever is arrived at would follow from that, referencing one or more dealers. Is there, but then I thought it was referenced earlier that participation and therefore the binding nature of the agreement was voluntary. So help me reconcile.
Well, it is in as much as ODA has stated that that they would not ratify an agreement, that they would not open up price negotiations over 50%, a majority of the capacity was represented. And I have to refer back to my earlier comments in that we were at somewhat of a disadvantage because of the time frame involved, and so we simply took the established, we took the verbiage that was used for 3811 and tried to make it fit without, a minimum amount of changes, simply seafood versus ryegrass to accommodate the time schedule involved. Had we started out with a blank piece of paper, I think it would have been a lot easier to spell it out. But the intent of everybody involved at this point, and I think it's been stated repeatedly, is that the process is totally voluntary. Nobody will be compelled.
Last one. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the intent, kind of the stated intent by ODA and the folks you represent would be to have it be truly voluntary and to not open up those negotiations unless a majority, I guess, on both sides of the capacity is represented.
Yeah.
But that's just not spelled out anywhere in the bill.
Yes, and I know that's one of the amendments that's been recommended, and there was some question about whether the bill needs to be amended or not. Quite frankly, and I'm not an expert on legislative policy at all or the procedures involved in this body. I don't pretend to be, but we have no problem if there's a need to make everybody comfortable with it of interjecting or amending it to make sure that it states clearly the intent was that it was going to be voluntary. We assumed that there was enough reference to the voluntary participation in the existing language that it covered that base. If it in fact doesn't, we personally have no problem in accommodating the request to clarify that.
Yes, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Krupp. Mr. Furman, thank you. I just have a quick question. I think you've answered most of my concerns. It said it was delayed this last winter for 21 days.
Yes.
Does this happen every year, or is this a...
I think roughly in the last 10 years, the season opens on December 1st in Oregon. This last year we had a split opener, and so part of the coast was open on December 10th, but part of the coast was open on December 1st. The area that was closed December 1st, or that was open on December 1st, still nobody went fishing. Over the last 10 years, I think 6 of the last 10 openers have been delayed because of price impasses. Now, we went back and looked. Some of those impasses last as short as 2, 3, or 4 days. This year was an extreme 21 days. But whether it's 1 day or 30 days, we're still missing the heart of our market opportunity, which everybody knows is the time leading up to the holiday season on the West Coast for Dungeness crab. We feel that time is that market opportunity, that time is too valuable to our industry to squander it in price disputes within the industry. We feel that this legislation, this format describing this legislation, especially if it's started in mid-November, would ensure that on December 1st that the gear was in the water and that people were catching and processing crabs.
Okay, thank you.
Nick, question for you. If in the language of the bill, if a majority of the food processors did not want to enter into voluntary negotiations, what would happen?
We're going down unexplored territory at this point in time because we haven't had a chance to apply the process, see how it's going to work. The assumption is that if one side or the other shows up to the table, assuming we pick a date, let's use November 10th just for discussion purposes, and ODA announces that there will be the initial meeting of bargaining teams representing harvesters and processors on the coast to discuss the price negotiation for the upcoming season on November 10th, and that day comes and only a handful of participants show up, or only fishermen show up and buyers don't show up, then it would be my assumption that ODA would declare the process null and void and would simply announce to the parties that we don't have a, it'd be like having a meeting without a quorum. You know, we can't conduct business because there's not the majority of the participants here. We don't know whether this is going to work. We do not know whether people are going to embrace the concept. We're sure we can say without any question that the fishing fleet is hoping and wanting this to work. And I'll tell you why I say this so boastfully, and that's because the Crab Commission doesn't enter into arenas like this very lightly. I think you've probably seen us here in the Capitol two or three times in the last 13 years. We spend most of our time marketing and promoting Oregon Dungeness. We've been very fortunate to have a fishery and a resource that doesn't need that doesn't need political massaging. That it's well managed, and so we've been able to just create Oregon identity for it in the marketplace. But you can rest assured that if the fleet was opposed to this concept of trying to come up with a new model and negotiate price, that our phones and the phones of the seven members of the commission who were appointed by the director of the Department of Agriculture, and for that matter Representative Krieger and Representative Messerly and Representative Verger and Brown's phones, Senator Messerly, excuse me, would be ringing off the hook saying, what's the Crab Commission doing? And we have heard virtually no opposition from the fleet. We also have processors who have signed on in support of it. Admittedly, they are small, but they said, yes, we are willing to try a new model because we do not want to go through what we've gone through the last couple of years in trying to get the fishery started. So we think that there's resounding support for this. If it doesn't work, there's no harm done. Everybody gets an A for effort. It's another tool in the toolbox. The parties might not meet this year. They might say, hey, this is, the market might be so hot for crab this year, we might not need any type of formal negotiation. It might be just like some years, it's a slam dunk. But on those years when it's difficult, if we have this as a tool in the toolbox, we feel that we'll be far, far ahead of where we are now.
Nick, if this law goes into effect as it's currently written with no amendments, it's pretty clear that one particular company buys 60% of the Dungeness crab. Mm-hmm. Well, what if they just decide not to come to the table and negotiate? Then you're just doing the same old dance again, aren't you?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Pretty much. We think we have a good enough relationship with that company. We think that in fact they can be taken on their word. We think that they are looking for ways to build bridges between harvesters and the processing segment of the industry, and we feel that that at some point in time they're going to recognize that this form of organized negotiation is in their benefit and in everybody's benefit, and that that they will eventually come to the table. So we'd like to have the opportunity. We'd like to have this legislation so that we can at least try to explore that possibility.
Okay, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Furman. Do all individuals who crab fish have to have a permit?
Yes, all three states within the last 6 or 7 years imposed limited entry programs so that it's not an open access fishery anymore. So they had to qualify to have a permit in Oregon, Washington, or California. That was one of the means of rationalizing the fishery and maintaining the sustainability and the economic viability was to keep a lid on the number of participants.
Follow up.
Sure.
Last question. If I'm a private individual and I decide on myself that to go out and, you know, crab and sell it to local yokels. Do I have to come under this ODA auspice? Governance kind
of? If you were a private individual and selling to local yokels, Representative Krieger's replacement in OSP would probably come and cite you with a violation of fish and seafood of regulations. You'd have to have a limited entry permit. You'd have to buy a crab permit to even enter into the crab fishery. Then you'd have to buy.
To be able to sell.
Pardon me? To be able to harvest.
To
be able to harvest. You can't fish crabs commercially on the Oregon coast unless you have a limited entry permit. There are 450 of those permits assigned to individuals on the coast right now. About 350 of them are active and about 100 of them are dormant. And so the assumption is that a percentage of those permits are for sale. You'd have to buy a crab permit, a commercial crab limited entry permit, to be able to go out and harvest crab. And if you wanted to sell to the public outside of selling to a seafood dealer, you'd have to go through licensing procedures through Fish and Wildlife and Department of Agriculture, depending upon what type of, what level you wanted to sell at.
And Mr. Furman, does this exclude other, you know, Japanese or others coming in to sell crab to the state?
Nobody would. There is no outside participation by any foreign entity in indigenous crab fishery on the coast. The state manages, controls waters out to 3 miles. The federal government controls the waters out to 200 miles. And so there, and crabs are all well inside of that. So there is no impact. There is no involvement in any type of or participation by anybody else besides fishermen that are licensed in one of the three states.
Well, that leads to the another one, Mr. Chair. I promise this is it.
Okay.
Okay. Well, Mr. Furman, let's say the buyers feel this price is too high. I mean, can we buy Maine lobster? Yuck. But, I mean, I'm just asking, right. I mean, what do we do in that case where other suppliers from not this West Coast decide to come in to sell crab?
Fortunately, Dungeness crab are indigenous only.
They only grow on the West Coast?
Central California, the Gulf of Alaska.
Okay, so
and so that.
And has nothing with us selling beyond these three states? Or does this.
No.
Has,
no, this is only
governed in these three states?
This only applies to harvest activity that occurs off the western U.S., and that's the only. That's the entire range of Dungeness crab.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm assuming that Oregon isn't the only state with a crab commission. Do the other two states?
No, actually, we are the only state with a crab commission.
Okay.
We are asked to regularly and to help promote California and Washington indigenous crab because they don't do that. So we're very fortunate to have a strong and healthy commodity commission program in the state. The industry has been very, very supportive of the indigenous crab commission in our efforts, and we have, I think, been quite successful in creating an Oregon identity for indigenous in the market around the country and around the world. And much to the chagrin of the folks in California and Washington.
A quick follow-up?
Yes.
Thank you. So have you any feedback from the other two states about this proposal at all?
The Pacific States Marine Fisheries Commission just held what we call a tri-state committee meeting 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago in Portland with representatives from Washington, Oregon, and California, both fisherman representatives, processor representatives, and state agency representatives. There's a follow-up to that meeting on the 21st of this month, next week in Portland. The concept was discussed not as an agenda item, but informally during the 2 days of those meetings. And quite honestly, we had no reservations from the folks we talked to in the other states. The fishermen in Washington and in California are also the ones that participate in the marketing association calls. They also feel that that there's a positive aspect to this, and quite frankly, I think what they're doing is they're sort of waiting on the sidelines to see what we do with this and how it would how it would impact them. Because we are currently negotiating the price coast-wide, there's the assumption that this would be the model and that we would go on business as usual, that they would simply benefit from our organized negotiation process when, once again, Oregon would be able to lead the way as far as the crab industry is concerned on the West Coast.
Thank you.
Further questions? Okay. Nick, thank you very much. We may want to call you back up here after a bit just to perhaps bat some cleanup or answer some additional questions. I'm sure they're probably going to come up here.
Thank you.
Chair would like to call. She's making copies. Okay, why don't we bring ODA forward then, if you would, please. Chuck and Brent. Welcome, Chuck. It's good to have you here in front of the committee again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Chuck Craig, the Deputy Director of the Oregon Department of Agriculture, and with me is Brent Searle, Special Assistant to the Director. Mr. Chair, we strongly support this bill as having the potential to have a beneficial stabilizing influence on this industry. I'd like to point out that, or try to clear up a little bit what our role is with this industry. Under Oregon law, seafood is a commodity, and the Department of Agriculture has statutory responsibility to promote the development and marketing of commodities. The Department of Fish and Wildlife regulates the fishing industry from the standpoint of managing the resource for sustained yield. So we don't issue permits to people to fish for crabs or anything else. Now, when it gets to processing and there might be a plant set up where food safety is an issue, then we would be involved in licensing that. And further in the statutes, we're given responsibilities and authorities to try to mediate between buyer and seller if the two groups are interested in that service. So our department's expertise on this subject lies with Brent, and I'm going to have him provide our testimony. I would try to answer just one of the questions that came up so far, and that is that the cost recovery mechanism for this process is paid for by the participants. $45 an hour is paid to the department. That charge is divvied up by all of the participants. The two negotiating sessions we've had so far with the ryegrass industry, that has been less than $1,000 per year for that industry. So,
generally, Chuck and Brent, before going further, and I declare a little bit of a conflict here as a grass seed grower, but has it been your understanding so far that the concept embodied here, which we put in place last session through House Bill 3811, that that has indeed worked successfully in the grass seed industry?
Mr. Chair, I think that we would say we believe it has been successful. Overall, as a process, if you were to ask that question to any one individual that's been involved, they might not have been completely happy with the outcome. But as a process that has gotten the parties together and enhanced the stability of the industry, we believe it has worked.
Okay. Very good. Brent, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Brent Searle, Oregon Department of Agriculture. To that question, Mr. Chair, I might just add a couple comments. The three direct benefits of this process are improved negotiating time. So it cuts down significantly on the process of price discovery and getting to a price. Secondly, it reduces the cost significantly for all the parties. It's our understanding, and Nick has told us in the seafood process he described in their negotiations, they've spent tens of thousands of dollars in their phone conferencing to get to a price in their current process. It's very expensive. It takes a lot of resources. And thirdly, it provides the antitrust immunity protection where all the parties can sit down together face-to-face and negotiate. So those are the three direct benefits of that process. In the grass seed industry, it has successfully fulfilled all those functions. I could walk you through, Mr. Chair, if you like, a brief description of the grass seed negotiations. Might give you a picture of that if you'd like me to do that.
Why don't you briefly?
Okay.
I think that'd be a good background.
Essentially, I have an email list of every dealer that deals with the Perennial Ryegrass Bargaining Association that has contracts with those growers. And generally, they're looking for price sometime in the spring for the crop that will be harvested that year. And in some cases, they've negotiated in the fall, a year ahead, sometimes the spring of that year. I send out an inquiry, do you want to meet, when do you want to meet, and get a polling of the parties. We try to decide on a date that everybody agrees to. I have surveyed the dealers in this case to know when people come to the table what amount of production is involved there. And the last negotiation we had, nearly 90% of all the dealers at the table who have acreage with contracted with the Perennial Ryegrass Bargaining Association. So it's become a recognized process in that forum for reaching price negotiations. Initially, the parties will bring data. They bring the market information, production information, import-export data. So, again, it facilitates that process of information exchange. This is all laid out. Everybody sees it. Everybody talks about it. They reach some general consensus on what that all means in terms of demand for the upcoming year, and then proposals are put on the table, and they see where each other are, and then generally we'll go into caucus. The dealers will talk about where they're at. The growers will meet in another room and talk about where they're at, and they'll do that back and forth. We'll come back together. They'll negotiate. They'll separate. We go through that process maybe four or five times. Generally, this takes 4 or 5 hours in that setting. It may be different in, we haven't done this with the seed food arena yet in a supervised process like this where everybody's in the room at the same time. But generally, it's been a one-day event. Occasionally, they've had to come back a couple weeks later and do another negotiation because they didn't reach a settlement the first time. But that gives you a brief description. So, 4 or 5 hours, one day, or maybe two. And again, as Chuck mentioned, less than, really it's been $800 to $1,000 a year for us to provide this service for them divided between the parties.
So. Okay. Members, questions?
I have a question.
Yes, Representative Smith.
Thank you. Mr. Craig and Mr. Searles, in your estimation, what other commodities would need this kind of legislation? I mean, we've done ryegrass, and now we're doing crab, so.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, the legislation, both state and federal, applies to those entities that are represented on the grower side by a bargaining association or a co-op. And not all industries are organized that way. So this would be applicable potentially to those types of associations that are trying to bargain prices for their members.
Right. How many, in your estimation, would there be around the state?
The hazelnuts have a price bargaining association. Some of the potatoes do price bargaining. There's some other co-ops, although they may not be same type of price negotiating as some of these other entities. Right now, I would say less than half a dozen are probably organized that way.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you. Could I ask,
Who proposed this Dash 2 amendment?
Did this come from me? It came from... they came through me at the request of opponents of the bill.
Okay, and the when you spoke before, Mr. Chair, you said the bill as it is. Well, I want to be sure that the bill as it is that I'm looking at, it has already been amended once.
That is correct.
And that's the one you really mean that we're
yes.
talking about.
When I refer to the bill as written, it is the bill that has come over from the Senate. Yes, not the proposed
amendment. The A in gross.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. And then one just
yes.
last question. If maybe I just ask y'all, if I don't mean this rudely, but if we thought it was better to use a different division than agriculture, would that be possible in this situation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, are you asking if the fishing industry wanted a different department mm-hmm. to do that, then certainly if that's what they prefer, we would support that.
My question,
sure.
call it, Mr. Chair, is that it specifically states that it has to be a state agency with oversight. So if we wanted this, for example, to come under the Economic and Community Development Commission, if some of the fishermen did, would they be able to change, or once we're with the Department of Ag, we stay with Department of Ag forever? No sunset,
well,
right?
Representative Nelson, I think, you know, if the industry wasn't happy with us and they wanted to make a change, I seriously doubt that we would stand in their way. But we have a long-standing relationship with the seafood industry, and that's really why we are named in the bill as the department that would conduct the negotiations because
for
of our other
fish and wildlife, for example.
Right.
My question.
Right, because our responsibilities go more toward seafood as a commodity and marketing as opposed to management of it as a natural resource, and so price negotiations seem to fit that function of ours better.
Question for you. In the current statute that we have today, are there the dealers that don't come to the table at the PRBA to negotiate on perennial ryegrass prices, are they bound by the price?
No.
They're not. Okay.
No.
Brent?
Mr. Chair, if I might clarify, that issue is largely determined by the bylaws of the cooperative that is negotiating with the dealers. So in the case of the Perennial Ryegrass Bargaining Association, their members are represented by PRBA in the negotiations, and whatever price they arrive at with dealers in that process is binding both on their members. They cannot sell at any other price, and dealers cannot buy at any other price for their members. Now, there are other growers who are not members of PRBA who are not obligated by that price, so it's determined by the bylaws of the association that's bargaining. In the case of the seafood organizations, it's my understanding that their bylaws are not constructed that way. In other words, they're fishermen members are not obligated through their bylaws to a price negotiated on their behalf. They are formed as a marketing association to be able to discuss prices with antitrust protection. But from that point on, they're not obligated in the same sense as the PRBA grower members are. So the issue of dealers being bound by that is largely determined by the bylaws of who they're negotiating with.
Okay, so what I'm hearing from you, let me read it back to you to see if I have it accurately, is that under the seafood bylaws, even though they may negotiate a price, it's not binding.
Correct.
Okay, it just, what it does is it's, as stated by Nick and the proponents of the bill, it clearly sets a beginning price
correct.
Whereby
the industry can get out there and start fishing.
Okay.
It stabilizes from that direction, but it doesn't mean that they're bound by it.
Mr. Chair, yes, and this process would not change that. At the present, they're not obligated to a price they negotiate. I mean, through the structure they use now, they negotiate a price, and it gets them out on the water, but nobody's bound legally by anything there. There's no written document. And this doesn't change that. It simply provides a forum to get them together all at the same table to do that negotiation.
So have you seen the Dash 2 amendments, Brent?
Just before we walked in the
you
door.
You did? Okay. Yes. Well, then I won't ask you the question, but there seems to be some language in here that talks about being bound. If you are participating in the negotiations, that you are, in fact, bound to those prices.
Mr. Chair, we haven't done a detailed analysis on this. I would just note that under the bill as drafted, I think the issue there could certainly be addressed by rule in clarifying that situation. It would be our intent to reflect the current practice that's going on. That's what we did in rule with the ryegrass folks, is sit down with the industry and determine what would work for them. And I think that can be clarified there.
Another question is, one of the things we talked about earlier that I'm having difficulty finding in the language of either the printed bill or the amendment is when does ODA authorize bargaining and negotiating? Is that when you, someone mentioned earlier, and I picked up on it, a majority of the either growers, cooperatives, or buyers. But I'm not seeing that language anywhere. So how do you determine the PRBA? How do you determine when you've got enough people interested to negotiate?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as I was describing previously, I pull the parties via email. Do you want to meet? And when I have a majority of folks, and in that arena, I shoot for about 70%. If we don't have 70% of the folks sitting at the table, then we probably don't have enough people at the table. That may differ here. And that, again, is something that I think we'd envision being established by rule with the parties involved in this process. What makes sense for the seafood industry to determine that we have enough people at the table that this is a viable process?
So the rules of 3811, the implementation of that, give you the flexibility to decide if you've got enough support out there. If you polled the members of the PRBA, the dealers, and the growers, and you couldn't get a majority, 50%, to want to come to a meeting, then I would assume that you would probably take a different direction under your rules?
Mr. Chair, in fact, that's happened a couple times. It was actually an issue of timing, and the ryegrass industry, there wasn't enough of them that wanted to meet in November, December of this last year, and so those negotiations were put off till April and May. Again, we're working with the industry on when they feel they want to meet. We have enough people who want to sit down. If they don't want to sit down and not enough of them do, we wouldn't host the negotiations. The statute is drafted, Mr. Chair, in regards to rules, simply says the director may adopt rules to carry out the director's authority. That's pretty broad, so it gives us pretty good latitude.
Okay, members, additional questions? Yes, Representative Hunt. I'm sorry. I ran over you. I'm sorry.
Not a problem.
Slap my hand.
Just following up on that last train of thought, you mentioned that it gives the department and the director, his language is, the latitude to have flexibility. Doesn't it also give the director really the authority, as the bill is currently written, to deal with a minority of entities on either side and impose a final price? Or is there something in here I'm missing that would put some sideboards on the department's ability I realize I'm not saying you're going to do that, but some future department, some future director. It seems like the authority to the director in the department is pretty broad in that respect.
Well, yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Hunt, I think that what one has to keep in mind here is that you can avoid being a part of this by not being a party to the negotiation. We can't force anybody to participate in the negotiation as a party. So if you choose not to show up and not participate, I don't know of any way that the director can establish a price that you have to buy or sell at. So
if I could follow up, Mr. Chair, I'm hearing you testifying that in terms of your intent of the way you would administer it. I guess I'm just not seeing that the way the statute is written now, because it talks about the cooperative or the harvester association may negotiate with one or more dealers to establish the price, and then goes on later to give the director the ability to compel the parties, and goes on into the language. It seems like if the department's intent was to do so, that you could take a minority on either side of the equation, bring them to the table, and impose a price that would be binding on all. That's the way I read the bill, but maybe you could point me to something in here that corrects that impression.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hunt, again, the issue of binding prices is determined by the bylaws of the association that's bargaining on behalf of its members. So that's not addressed specifically in the legislation at all. So the way the cooperative or bargaining association is organized determines the binding impact of a negotiated price. In this case, the seafood bargaining associations do not have binding bylaws that obligate their members to a price, which means those prices are not binding on purchasers of those products. Well, if Mr. Chair, under current statute, the department has authority to assist grower organizations and buyers negotiate prices. That's already current law, if we're asked to do so. And essentially, that's what this does. If we're asked to do so, we will help facilitate this process. And if we're not asked to do so, we won't. If there are, a small number of fishermen and some dealers who want to sit down with our help, there's nothing to preclude that from happening. But again, the binding applicability of it beyond those who are sitting at the table simply doesn't exist, because the bylaws of that association don't require that.
Okay. If I can ask one other question, just help me understand. There's been a lot of comparisons to the chairman's bill from the last session. Could you give me a sense of how those two industries are similar, perhaps, and how they differ, the ryegrass industry and the seafood industry, in terms of percentage of a product that's produced in Oregon, the price predictability of those products? Could you compare and contrast? Since we're looking at a process that seems to have worked for ryegrass, I'm just wondering how the actual entities that we're regulating here may be similar or different.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hunt, I think I'll take a stab at it, and maybe Brent can fill in. The ryegrass industry is made up of several hundred small family businesses. They're not generally large corporate farms. They're small businesses. We produce probably 65% approximately of the ryegrass seed produced in the nation. Almost all that is exported from the state. There are several competing regions that, although Oregon has a competitive advantage in producing ryegrass because of the unique combination of climate and soils and so forth. There are other regions of the world who can and do produce ryegrass, and when the prices that our producers or dealers seek to charge seem to be more than buyers want to pay, those other regions come into play, and this has happened in the past. And in addition, production in other countries can and often is heavily subsidized by the government, and it's not in Oregon. So you have New Zealand, various areas of Europe, Argentina, Chile, the Skagit Valley of Washington, Canada. There are several regions, and that's sort of analogous to the several states on the Pacific coast that can have fishing fleets that fish for Dungeness crab. The price of ryegrass seed can be quite variable from year to year, and in the past it's gone through pretty wild swings between not being profitable and being very profitable. The same thing happens with Dungeness crab. I think they're fairly similar in that we have a uniqueness of the resource and a commodity that results from the uniqueness of the resource. The structure of the producers is relatively similar in that there are lots of small grass seed producers and lots of small fishing entities. There have been significant parallels. A few years ago, there was one company that tried to acquire most of the grass seed production in Oregon.
Still paying for that.
Called ABT. It acquired, 70% of the seed production, and then it collapsed and left the growers holding the bag. Similar things have happened in the Oregon seafood industry in terms of concentration in the buyer sector. So I think that fishing is more dangerous than grass seed production. There's not too much
considerably
not too much question about that. The weather and all those things probably has a more serious acute immediate effect, but it's still a big factor, a huge factor in grass seed production. A dry month of May can make a difference of 20 or 30% in the ultimate yield. World prices and weather in other areas of the world, turf survival over the winter in the eastern United States has a huge impact on our market. Fires, forest fires, droughts, things like that also have caused huge fluctuations in the prices. So, there are more similarities, I think, than there are differences, even though on the surface of it, fish doesn't look much like a grass seed. And does that help?
Yeah. Okay, very good. Thank you, gentlemen, very much. I'd like to call forward Cindy Robert. Kylie, are you coming up too? Oh, darn. Welcome, Cindy.
Thank you.
And you have provided us with a copy of your testimony?
No. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Robert. I work with Roger Martin. I've worked with him for 12 years. He represents Pacific Seafood Group. He's out of town last week and this week, and I'm here in his stead. And it's been enjoyable. I want you to know that I offered the -2 amendments. But there, after talking to some of the gentlemen and ladies who are behind me in the fishing industry, I have been convinced that some of the things really aren't right in there. The fact that I said, let's just limit this to the crab industry, they convinced me that no, that perhaps that wasn't correct. There's some other amendments in there that maybe aren't necessary. However, I think it has been very clear today that the proponents of the bill, and I've followed each one out of here to talk to them about what I was going to say to you folks, so this is no surprise, but every single one of them thought that, first of all, this was a season starting price. They didn't intend for it to be the firm price throughout the season. That's what the language says. I went to legislative council and got clarification on this as well. That's what the piece of legislation before you says. It says nothing about fluctuation, nothing about it being the season starting price. So that's one change that I think that clearly was their intent that needs to be fixed. Second intent was also made clear here. You cannot bind people who do not agree to be bound. You cannot provide taxation without representation. You cannot, and this bill was not intended, to force a price on anyone who did not come to the table and agree to that price. The whole point is to make everybody come to the table and talk. And you encourage someone to do that by giving them the opportunity to negotiate and say yes or no. Clearly, the intent was to make sure that no one was bound. You've heard here that that's in the association bylaws. We're not part of those associations. Those bylaws do not affect us. Bylaws can be changed. We're hoping that you'll see fit to do it statutorily. Secondly, you've been told that maybe they could address this issue in bylaws. Hope not. I would like to see, in rules. I would like to see it done through statute. Those are the two areas that I think clearly the proponents of the bill had said it was their intent all along. So I'd like to fix it. I know we're short on time. I've worked very hard trying to come up with amendments that everyone can agree to. The dash twos were really close. I think what I'm about to give you, although it's hand done, and I just had Kylie go up and talk to the speaker, I understand you can't do conceptual amendments, but maybe something we can come back and do. Again, I did tell Senator Messerly and Representative Krieger that I intended to share this with you and ask you to make these changes. And I will hand those to David. They are changes only to page 2 of the bill, and I have also handed those to a couple of the harvesters who are represented here and the crab representative Furman. So they have those. They're simple. I think they make clear what was intended. I do want to follow up with one thing, and that's what everyone keeps saying. Well, we can't force them to participate. We can't force them to participate, so, you know, why do they care? I care because the company wants to participate. We're not looking for an out. We want to participate, so we want the program that we're being asked to participate in to be as good as it can be, which means it has to be legal as far as its binding abilities, and it has to be clear what we're there to do, and that's start put into effect a season starting price. We want to sit down and talk with these folks.
So, Cindy, clarify something for me. It seems like you're saying that the dash twos are not needed.
Representative Krupp, the dash twos changed it all to the Dungeness crab season only, and I have made a decision that that's not necessarily. I have tried to call Pacific Seafood and run that by them. They're not available, so I guess it's up to me to make that decision. And I think that the folks behind me have some really good arguments as to why it should be the whole industry, not only the harvesters, but the Department of Agriculture, as to why it should be this way. So hence the dash twos. They changed everything to just Dungeness crab, so we can toss those out.
Okay. Members, questions? Gee, how'd you get off so easy?
Well, Chair Krupp, I'm not off easy if you don't make some changes.
Well, Cindy, I think that. Probably will go in that direction. I do want to hear from a lot of the fishermen that are here today next. So this, as what you've engrossed here is you're still wanting to stay with the word pricing parameters?
No.
Okay.
Chair Krupp, I took that out.
So it's season starting.
Season starting price. Senator Messerly told me that was clearly the objective. So, okay. Heck, why dance around it? Let's put in clearly what the objective was. Season starting price.
Okay. Very good.
And then let the market forces go. I might add, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't have any anecdotal things I can share with you about this company, but I will say that I've had nothing to do with the company that hasn't been on the upright, and they have very much encouraged me to come here and work with everybody. So they very much wanted to participate in this process.
Okay. Thank you, Cindy, for all your hard work on this. Appreciate it. Now, the chair knows there's a number of fishermen in the audience, and I'm just going to invite you now, which I can do, to come forward. Whoever would like to first, or come in a group if you would like, three at a time, and just share your thoughts with us. We certainly want to hear from you if you've made the journey here. We want to hear how this affects you and what your thoughts are on the entire concept. If you have copies of your testimony, please give them to David. If not, we can take notes. Welcome to you, and please, as each one of you start talking, identify yourself, who you are, as we are being recorded, and for the future, we'll need to know who it was that was talking at the time. So welcome, sir. If you want to start with you, please.
For the record, Chairman Krupp, members of the committee, my name is John Warner. I'm the owner and manager of Kalin Fisheries in Charleston, Oregon. I'm here today to ask you to support Senate Bill number 673 and move it forward to the Senate floor. This bill is has a potentiality to help stabilize the economies of our coastal fishing communities while providing an opportunity to move some of our state's marine resources to the marketplace when demand is at its peak. We offload at Kalin Fisheries and ship Oregon marine resources to many wholesalers on the West Coast from San Diego to Seattle. One of the principal products that we purchase and ship to the customer is Dungeness crab. To the consumer, Dungeness crab has become a wintertime treat that demands high price during the Christmas holidays. The crab industry on the West Coast presently has no legal means of collectively negotiating a price between the fishing industry and multiple buyers in an open supervised forum. This always leads to a situation where one or several of the largest buyers on the coast refuse to negotiate, forcing the commercial fleet to tie up without a starting price. In this scenario, fishermen generally lose opportunities to sell their products when demand is high, and large processors at a later date are able to purchase products at a greatly reduced price because the peak demand has passed. The process that we have today nearly always has negative economic impacts on fishers and smaller processors. The fishing industry desperately needs Senate Bill 673 so that buyers and fishers can openly discuss marketing issues and settle on a starting price before the time comes to set crab gear in the last week of November. If large processors do not want to negotiate, that is their option. At least under Senate Bill 673, the parties who are willing to move forward can do so in an organized, state-supervised forum that would ensure immunity from state and federal antitrust laws. In May of 2001, the legislature passed House Bill 3811, which allowed the perennial ryegrass industry to do the same thing we are asking for, to resolve the same kinds of issues. We are asking nothing more. I strongly recommend your support for Senate Bill 673 for the good of industry and the social and economic health of our coastal communities. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Questions, John, members? Appreciate it. Welcome, sir. State your name, please.
Thank you.
Chairman Krupp, members of the committee, my name is Russell Smotherman. I am the president of the Pacific Northwest Dungeness Crab Marketing Association. Our marketing association's membership of 100 represents vessel owners, operators, and crewmen from the ports that border the mouth of the Columbia River, three vessels from the port of Garibaldi, Oregon, and residents of the Pacific Northwest who fish out of the Columbia River during the Dungeness crab season. Senate Bill 673 has had our attention from its inception. It has been monitored, discussed, and voted upon at several meetings as it has made its way through the legislative process. Each and every vote taken has been unanimous in support. Our membership can find no fault with a bill that will allow voluntary participation in price negotiations without the threat of antitrust repercussions. Senate Bill 673 passage will benefit not only the Dungeness crab industry, but also the citizens of Oregon for these dominoing reasons. Senate Bill 673 will allow for earlier preseason negotiations in a more professional style than is now allowed under existing law. This, in turn, will help stabilize traditional starting dates for the fishery, marketing strategies by the processors, and would allow the retailer to ensure to the buying public that the preseason ads they run will be fulfilled, not pulled because of delays brought on by 11th-hour negotiations and protracted discussions that have affected the industry these past few years. In conclusion, Mr. Chairman and members of this committee, passage of this bill does no one any harm. Opponents of the bill can still show their disdain by not volunteering to negotiate. Defeat of this bill does cause harm, though. It will keep Oregon's most valuable single-species seafood products pre-season price negotiations chaotic and archaic. We ask you to support and pass Senate Bill 673. Thank you.
Thank you. Before you start, sir, I wanted to ask you a question. And it's a question I had asked earlier, so I wanted to ask it from somebody who's involved in doing this. In fact, either one of you can answer. If a dealer decides not to participate, I'm assuming you have, even though one company buys most, I'm assuming there are other companies that buy also.
There are numerous companies.
What would be the effect if say, the largest dealer decided not to participate, but the smaller dealers did? What would be the dynamics there? What would happen?
Well, it would allow the Dungeness crab fleet to negotiate a price with the buyers that were willing to buy, and in order, and it would allow them to possibly start fishing on the scheduled time that we're supposed to start fishing. It would allow the smaller buyers to negotiate directly with us, where they would not be felt threatened by the larger companies. It would ensure them that we would bring them the product. It would just help out all around for the smaller. It is very advantageous to the smaller buyer to have this bill's passage.
So am I assuming that if the larger buyer chose not to come in and negotiate, but the smaller buyers did, that the smaller buyers would capture the market share, correct?
That is correct. They would capture the market share, and that in turn would force the larger buyers to negotiate because now they are being left out of that market.
So clearly no one wants to be left out of the market. So the reality is, if we pass this bill, people are going to come to the table and negotiate. They're just going to be able to do so in a framework that isn't illegal.
Correct.
Okay, very good. Sir, you've been very patient.
I'd like that.
Welcome, and state your name first.
Okay, Lloyd Whaley. I have three fishing vessels that shrimp, crab, drag fish, whatever we need to do in the fishing industry to make a living. And I very well understand the bill here, and I'm for it. I'm for the crab, too, but I'm looking at the rest of the industry is where it's really needed. As part of the answer there, I would look at that answer the other way. When you have somebody that's going to harvest 60% and they're not at the table dealing, they're going to cut the price and their boats are going to go fishing because you got the majority of them sitting there without a market order. There you go. So there's got to be some validity in this bill somewhere to say if you're going to buy our product, you're going to pay X amount of dollars. Somewhere along the line, this has got to happen. And I can give you examples of what just happened last year and at the start of the fish or the shrimp season. We have one boat in the port. Everybody's setting in trying to get a price from our one big buyer, which is Pack Choice or whoever. And they call up one boat, told him to go fishing for 27 cents. He will deliver more product than anybody because there was a volume of product around, and this is what happened. So what an incentive to drop the price on the fleet. And this is exactly what happened. He got out first. He got to deliver, right, trip after trip after trip. And the other fishermen had to sit and look at this. And these are the tactics that are being pulled all the time here. And you also, I had a boat with crabs on sitting in Newport before Christmas. We don't want your crabs right now. We'll get them after Christmas. Well, after Christmas, it was $1.40, which was low to start with. They dropped the price to $1.25, but we'll pay you what you had on there at a certain date. We'll give you $1.40. The rest of them we're going to buy for $1.25. Well, I unloaded what they wanted at $1.40 and left the rest of the crabs in, went down the street and sold them. But most guys don't have this option. I happen to have another boat fishing for Trident Fish Company, and they were willing to take my crabs because I fish other product for them. So it's really, this whole thing is very complicated. How do you get honesty on the street here? And it's, like I say, I'd like to see any march forward here. And I would like to nominate Representative Nelson there to start out our marketing at $5. And I know I'll get a stack of back here.
I'm for it.
Okay, Lori. Representative Barr, you have a question of our
witness. Well, and I probably should have asked this of all of them. The suggestion here that we put in season starting price, how does that fly with you? Is that an okay amendment?
Well, we need an opening price, but we also need the guys not to get their gear in the water or get shrimping, get them enough little fresh product. Okay, that's all we want today. They know they're sitting out there with gear in the pots. They know there's shrimp on the boats. They know there's drag fish coming in. Dropping the price whenever they feel like it, because we have no options.
Well, but this bill still, though, doesn't address that particular.
But I'm bringing these points out. This is a start, and we've got to start somewhere to stop this. Because I have crews. I've just put a boat at the dock because of 15-cent shrimp, which is unrealistic. I mean, you know what you pay for shrimp, no matter when you go to the store. And so I'm losing three guys because the boat has to go to the dock. I will not let them fish that product at that price. I'm doing other alternate things to try to get into some other type of fisheries. Our traditional fisheries, with the monopolizing of the product, we're done. I have guys that can't pay their car payments. They can't make their mortgage payments. They can't even pay their credit cards. They've got them over. And it's not because they're lazy. We have federal regulations, and then we have this monopolizing of our prices.
Okay. Lloyd, any further questions, Representative Byer, anything else?
Well, no, I'm not sure I got an answer, but other than that.
What was your question again?
About the season starting price. Is that, I mean, would you want to change the bill to state that, or would you want just the bill the way it is?
I think it would depend how it's written. I think there needs to be a little more teeth put into it here. I don't know how to explain it, but it's not everything that it's going to answer some questions, but not everything we need in order to move forward.
Well, Lloyd, I have a feeling you're going to get your chance to put your 2 cents worth in on that issue here very shortly. And Representative Hunt, you have a question for Lloyd.
Yeah. Let me just clarify based on one thing you said earlier. You said, or maybe it was your predecessor on the panel, talked about it would be a great benefit for a lot of the smaller buyers, which I assume wasn't a reference to Representative Byer as one of the smaller buyers. But hey, people have been making fun of my last name this whole session, so turn about fair play. But you said there'd be great benefit for a lot of the smaller buyers that are out there. Is there, in terms of the language that was suggested in the -2 amendments that talks about any agreements that arise from negotiations conducted under this section are binding only on the parties that participate in the negotiations and agree to be bound. Am I correct to understand that you're okay with that language?
Well, here's the thing that I tried to explain. A gentleman here explained it that way, but my explanation on this, okay, you have your small buyers come in, they're negotiating, they set up a price, but you still have maybe 60-70% of the fleet setting here. There's only so many crabs, and they're going to get caught quick. And when this thing happens, the minute the small buyers send a few boats out, hey, the price is gone. Other boats are going to go get their crabs. They're not going to sit and watch this happen because that's the season. Everybody's got to be at the table. And my feeling, if you're not at the table, you don't buy, but I can't make those laws.
If I may.
Yeah, re-identify yourself first.
That's Russell Smotherman, Pacific Northwest Dungeness Crab Market.
Pull the microphone, Russell. Thanks.
Russell Smotherman, Pacific Northwest Dungeness Crab Marketing Association. Mr. Chair, Representative Hunt. It will, unfortunately, the process that takes place now, it is not conducive for the small buyer because they are under fear that the larger buyer will undersell them, undercut them once that they get product rolling into the processors. So the process we go through now, the smaller buyer is actually afraid to negotiate with us. They ride on the coattails of the larger processors, and they state to us that when they come up with the price, then we'll match that price. Now, that isn't really what they would like to do, because there is a very niche market at the beginning of the Dungeness crab season for fresh sales, and that is what drives these smaller processors, is the whole cook and section market. They can't afford to go into the freezer with the product like the larger processors. So it's almost necessary that we have the ability to negotiate with all interested parties to try to work out some kind of orderly start to this season. These delays have cost the communities on the Oregon coast millions of dollars and very stressful times because of the delays, the close proximity to the start of the seasons, of the holiday time period. It affects the processors and the workers that they have in the plant. We need to get back to the ability to start the seasons at the 1st of December as we have for the last 50 years or more. And that is not taking place here in the last 3 to 5 years.
Okay, very good. Representative Hunter, are you good to go?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, thank you, gentlemen, very much. Sure, absolutely.
I'd like to add one more thing to that. When you're talking about getting the industry moving, which I've watched the hazards. I've been in the business over 35 years. I've watched the hazards of the boats lost and the lives lost. And I would like to see a set date to where the smaller boats could get their gear out, get it fishing, and what have you. But it also comes back to getting ads in the paper. Now, I have a boat that started down in San Francisco. I forget who it was, Safeway or one of them put in a $100,000 ad for crabs. Well, the season didn't start. So there goes your marketing. You know, and when they don't get their crabs and they pay that kind of money for the ads and everything, it really hurts. So that's where this negotiation would really help.
Very good. Good point.
Thank you.
You bet. Thank you both very much. Anyone else here? Welcome, sir. Come on up and sit down and tell us who you are and what you think about this.
My name is Jeff Mulkey. I'm a fisherman from Reedsport, Oregon. And I was involved in negotiations in the 90s when the Department of Justice came after a few of us. And at the meetings that we were doing at that time, it was a coastwide representation from Fort Bragg to Westport, Washington. And at the last meeting especially, there was probably more discussion of doing something like this bill for our negotiating before the season ever started and get the process rolling so people could go on with their lives a little more in a normal fashion. And so I wanted that brought out, that this has been discussed and been in a lot of people's minds to do this way before the season so we could do this in a normal fashion and get out of the Stone Age, I should say. Try to. So I'd really like to see this passed myself, too.
Very good. Thanks for making the journey up here from Reedsport today. Questions before we leave? Okay. Sir, you also come forward. For the record, state your name.
Hey, my name is Brad Pettinger. I'm the crab fisherman, actually shrimper, crabber, dragger out of Brookings. I'm also on the Oregon Desert Crab Commission. I think one of the things that this last year is that after we went through the whole process is that virtually everybody I talked to says, boy, I sure don't want to be here doing this again next year. And I think that basically what we saw last year is everybody lost. The processing sector lost, the fishermen lost, and the public lost. You know, one of the great things about Oregon Dungeness Crab is that it truly is one of the finest crustaceans in the entire world. And the people of Oregon and the people other people we sell to didn't get the access to that fresh product like they normally would because our season was basically suspended through price negotiations excuse me, until the 21st, 22nd of the year. So basically, there was a huge window of opportunity that was lost because we're still doing the same old crap year after year after year. And I think one of the problems is we've seen is the on the retail sector is a lot of chain markets are not willing to put out ads because every year they got to pull them because there's no crab in the market because we're doing the same thing again. So I would just urge you to pass pretty much what we have here in front of us. It isn't perfect. We need to get something going. You know, I sat for 14 days last year in flat, calm weather like that parking lot. Something you won't see in November or late November or December. And then the weather turned to crap. And after what happened to Sika, you know, a year and a half ago, we lost more people. You know, you hate to see the flat weather go by like that. And a lot of lost opportunity every year. So, anyway, I just urge you to move forward in this.
Thank you, Brad. Questions? Okay. Thank you very much. And with that, the chair is going to direct the proponents and opponents of this bill to get together and make those minor language changes, go to LC with that ASAP, and we're going to bring this bill back up on Thursday and pass it out. That is the chair's intention. And I want to thank all of you for coming here today and for being very patient. Good work to you all, and we're going to close a work session on Senate Bill 673A, and members, we are adjourned.